Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we conclude our series of interviews with Republican candidates for the 2nd Congressional District. And as always, we want your questions, especially if you live in the 2nd District. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call 1-800-892-6477. You can also watch our interview today on Facebook Live. Our candidate today is Republican Steve Negron from Nashua. He's a state representative, retired Air Force officer. Representative Negron, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Laura.
So you are the 5th Republican in this 2nd Congressional District race. How do you distinguish yourself among fellow Republicans running for this nomination, Mr. Negron? Why are you the best choice?
Well, absolutely. That's a great question. I think that my varied background, I'm not singularly focused when I was in the military. My military background, I was in a unique position. I was an ICBM missile combat crew commander in the height of the Cold War in the 80s. So I was 90 feet underground, and I was responsible, along with my crew partner, for 10 nuclear weapons in the event that the president would give us the authority to do that.
So it sounds like a Tom Clancy novel.
It was. And that's what we used to do on Alert, was read Tom Clancy.
Really?
When it first came out. Absolutely. And so it was a very unique time under President Reagan, and we knew who the bad guy was at the time. You just had to look east, you know, it was the Soviet Union. And now there's really this emergence of that same kind of feeling of unrest in the nuclear world. So I think my background in that lends itself very well to what's happening both in North Korea and with the Iran deal. And then I went into the Department of Defense acquisition business. So I learned how to buy weapon systems for the government. So there's a lot of deep, dark secrets that are out there about what we do stuff and how we do stuff and what we can do it better. And then I finished my career in Air Force Space Command. So I learned the space side of the house and working with the folks in Colorado Springs. And then I came into industry when I retired. And so I worked for the large defense contractors. I ran the Boston corporate office for Lockheed Martin for about 5 years. And then I started my own business. And I've been doing that since 2005. So my experience across the board, I think, is varied. I think it gives me a different perspective than some of the others in the race. It isn't singularly focused, as I said. So I think that gives me a breadth and a depth of experience that I think that Congress really needs in a representative.
What did you learn in your one term in the legislature about governing and your own approaches toward governing?
I think the biggest thing I learned is that people fundamentally in this state have a belief that they can affect change. And I sat in the election law committee, and we were pretty busy over the last session.
I bet. And all those voter bills
and
so forth.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Absolutely. But people would drive, Laura, 2.5 hours for 5 minutes of your time to be able to look and fundamentally believe they had an ability to have their voices heard and they could affect change. And that was profound on me. And I looked back and I said, you know what? Do we really have that at the federal level? And do we have people that listen to the voices of the constituents? I didn't believe that we have that, and that's why I entered the race.
Well, and let's talk about elections. As you said, you served on the election committee in the House here
yes,
in
ma'am.
New Hampshire. How concerned are you, Representative Negron, about the security of our elections in this country after U.S. intelligence agencies have confirmed Russian interference in the 2016 election? They are warning that interference is ongoing. If you're elected to Congress, what would you do about this?
Well, certainly, you know, we need to maintain and preserve the sanctity of the vote within the states. I love New Hampshire. We do paper ballots. You know, it's kind of hard to be able to do something.
Hard to hack a paper
ballot.
Hard
to hack the paper ballot. It's true. But, you know, a lot of people think that technology is good just for technology's sake, and it makes it easier and it makes it more convenient for people to vote. I mean, we heard situations where people wanted to vote from their cell phone or they wanted to vote from their laptop. I think when you introduce technology like that, there are people out there, which we've seen, with this Russian investigation, that there's an opportunity for them to be able to do some things that would probably put a hiccup into our election system. So we need to make sure that we protect that across the board for everybody. And whatever we could possibly do within Congress to be able to protect that, I think we have to do that clearly.
So if you were elected, what sorts of legislation would you propose, Representative Negron, to preserve that integrity?
Well, certainly, I think you have to look at who are the people that are putting these systems together. You know, what is the vetting of the system, of the producers of these systems, these electronic systems? I think just like we do in the military, we look at vendors that actually provide piece parts when we build weapon systems. They have to have a vetted process. So we have to make sure that those people that are doing that, that we do a good scrub on them, you know, that they actually have the rights. There's not some sort of third-party entity that they get piece parts from. And that's really where some of the stuff happens is when you buy it from a third-party vendor, they put some stuff in the system, and that's what we'd have to control. So I put some controls about who are the people that are actually building and producing and providing these electronic voting systems.
Well, I'd love to talk to you more about that. We don't have time, but it's really interesting. But I do have to ask you, Representative Negron, about the news out of Washington this week. Many Capitol Hill Republicans say these guilty pleas and convictions of close presidential associates make it harder to run as a Republican this fall. How are you going to talk about this with New Hampshire voters, bringing it down here to the Granite State, if you're the nominee?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's all that news that's coming out, and I'll be honest with you, Laura, doesn't affect me in our race and in our campaign here. We're about the voters of New Hampshire. We've knocked on over 20,000 doors. And even though this is recent, I mean, we were just out talking yesterday. This doesn't rise right now to the point that that's what the issue of the people of New Hampshire. They're worried about the debt. They're worried about national security. They're worried about immigration, opioid issue. Those are the things that we're hearing when we're knocking on doors of the folks. Look, you know, Mr. Cohen and Mr. Manafort have their own issues. It's not mine right now. Mine is about making sure that we have the right voice and the right message for the 2nd Congressional District.
Well, and you actually guessed my next two topics with you, debt and opioids. So I do want to talk about that because those are very important. But I just have to ask you one more question about this, Mr. Negron, because I've been watching your campaign videos and so forth, and you really campaign as a man of character, a man of faith, a man of strong family values. You know, you can feel the glow when you talk about your kids and your family. You talk about service to the military and country. How concerned are you, Mr. Negron, about the behavior we've seen from this White House? Affairs, payoffs, cover-ups, financial corruption by key advisors. These do not seem to be the values that you are presenting to the voters.
Absolutely. And I need to make sure that I still maintain my center. And as you said, and I appreciate the nice words about how I speak about my family, my children. My role as a representative is to be the voice of the people of New Hampshire. And they need to know that the person that they send, that they fundamentally have a trust in who I am. And, you know, people ask me all the time, what makes you different? What makes you different when you go to Washington versus anything else, or what you read or hear or see on television? And what I tell people, Laura, is that, look, I enjoy what I'm doing, but the thing that defines Steve Negron is that I am a husband, is that I am a father, and that I'm a God-fearing man and a small business owner. Those are the characteristics that are unwavering for me. And so that's what I think the people of New Hampshire really want to know. Can they send somebody to Washington that they know is not going to flap in the wind like we see a lot of other people do, and that I fundamentally am still true to my core, and that's who's going to be representing the 2nd CD.
So you don't feel like this is going to bring you down as a Republican?
No, ma'am. No.
All right. Let's turn to debt. And you've said many times fiscal conservatism is important to you. You've said in your campaign there's a great national insecurity, I'm quoting you there, when it comes to the federal debt. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that the new Republican tax law will increase the national debt by almost $2 trillion over the next 2 years. Meanwhile, the deficit slated to increase to $1 trillion.
Right.
Lots of zeros there. starting next year. What steps would you take, Representative Negron, to tackle this? And if I could follow up, was that Republican tax bill a mistake given what we're seeing with the debt?
Well, I think you have to look at it in totality. So first of all, my position is tax breaks is just one half of the equation, and you can't just do a tax break and think it's going to rectify the problem. Tax breaks and tax reduction have to be hand in hand with debt reduction. And I haven't seen yet where we're looking at it reducing the debt, because those things are mutual. I mean, they have to be done in concert. So I think the tax breaks were good. Now, I haven't seen the reduction in debt yet, and that has to happen clearly. I don't know if you've heard me talk, but I believe in this process called zero-based budgeting, which is where, and it's across the board. You have to look at the budget that you currently have, and zero-based budgeting says you start from zero, and you need to justify it from a bottoms up. And a lot of people do just assume that they're going to have the same budget from the previous year. And as a DOD guy and somebody who has put Air Force budgets together, you know, it actually then drives behavior. They know that they don't have to be responsible because they know they're going to get, at a minimum, the previous year's budget. I think we have to rip the Band-Aid off. I think everybody, and everything's on the table, that everybody needs to be able to share the pain and do a bottoms-up review. And they'll surprise you, Laura. You know, I've had programs when I was a government program manager where the Air Force says, you know what, you had $250 million, now you only have $170 million. We make it work. We make it work because we're resilient people, but somebody's got to actually identify it and then put people in place that are able to execute that kind of plan.
So if you were in Congress at the time that this thing was being crafted, would you have said, Representative Negron, no, I'm not voting for this thing until you put those debt and deficit reductions in place.
I would have been a voice that said, you know, I understand the tax and the debt and the tax cuts, which are, in my opinion, which were good, but that's short term. Where's the other part of it? Because it is a complete equation. So absolutely. And we need to start talking about that now. And I don't hear that right now coming out of Washington.
Okay. I want to invite our listeners to join us, Mr. Negron, as well. 1-800-892-6477. We've got a couple more minutes with Representative Steve Negron. He's one of five or six candidates.
Seven
candidates. Thank you. Running for the 2nd Congressional District Republican nomination. You can join us with an email exchange at nhpr.org. And Representative Negron, let's go to Jay in Plymouth. He's on the line. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The House recently passed a bill cutting millions in funding for environmental protections, including $100 million from the EPA's budget. And I'd like to ask Representative Negron if he supports moves to roll back those environmental protections and undermine the EPA.
When you say environmental protections, Jay, can you be specific? Like Clean Power Plan? Is that what you're talking about? Or?
Well, the second part of my question was related to the contaminated water in New Hampshire.
Sure, big
and
issue.
Whether, yeah, exactly. So I'd like him to speak on his perspective on the EPA's budget as related to how it would affect New Hampshire.
Jay, thank you so much. And two pieces have come up around this. One is the contaminated water. And from what I understand, Representative Negron, the federal government has sent more resources to help
right.
with that PFAS, the contamination.
Right.
Is that correct?
It is. That is correct. And that's a very good question. I think probably this brings the problem back up a little bit bigger is that you have agencies that are so large, so overwhelmingly hard to navigate that it makes these things for us to be nimble and to address specific issues very difficult to do. So from an EPA perspective, I think all federal agencies, we have to look at again, just like I was talking about a zero-based budgeting, a bottoms-up review is like, do I really need and what is the function of, for example, the EPA? Now, I believe the EPA does have a role. I think the EPA has to provide situations where we have frameworks to work within. But I think it has to work in concert with the state. And I think if the state is able to then eloquently put forward a situation like this water contamination, then I think the EPA has a role. To go ahead and say that, you know, we made a reduction in money given to the EPA to handle these situations, that's really kind of a broad brush. I'd have to figure out, you know, did that money, in fact, be earmarked for that kind of stuff? And if it is, then we have to be able to work in concert with the federal government. What you'll find a lot is a lot of these situations come up where military bases were closed, where we really didn't have a lot of insight and or oversight within the state. And I think the state has to work in concert with the EPA. But to answer your question directly, if, in fact, we have a situation here that there's water contamination and we validated that threat, then I think we have to work with the federal government to make sure that we can work in concert to fix the problem.
Well, and on the Clean Power Plan, there was news this week that the president wants to roll back the Clean Power Plan. This is an issue in New Hampshire because we're often called the tailpipe for the Midwest. We get a lot of their power. And the EPA's own report said, I believe, that the rollback of this plan would cause hundreds of premature deaths due to air pollution. So I wonder if you think this is a wise move for New Hampshire.
Well, certainly any legislation that's not going to help my state, I would certainly be a strong voice against it. You know, it isn't. I'm not going to be going to Washington to be a rubber stamp for an administration. My role as the representative from the 2nd Congressional is to make sure that my constituents are served first and foremost. And so if there's something out there that is fundamentally against the bettering of our state, then I would be against those kind of regulations, those kind of laws.
Well, I have to ask you about another issue, Representative Negron, that's been a big issue in the campaign this year, and that is, and I've heard you talk about this in the campaign trail as well, how to tackle this issue of mass shootings, my goodness, happening in all sorts of places, malls, movie theaters, church, but attention is especially focused on schools, so that's what I'm going to ask you about. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is reportedly weighing whether to allow states to use federal funding to purchase guns for educators. But back in March, Congress passed a school safety bill, again in response to these shootings, allocating millions of dollars for school districts, but prohibiting the use of money for firearms. So if you were there, Representative Negron, which approach would you support? Betsy DeVos's possible approach of allowing federal dollars to buy guns, or the way Congress has gone so far, saying, here's money for school safety, but don't use it to buy guns? Which do you think is the better way to go?
Well, I think the first thing, Laura, is to figure out, if we can, you know, why do people believe that the way they act to these situations, that's how they feel that they need to resolve whatever conflict they have?
Right. I've heard you talk about that.
I bubble that up a little bit further. First of all, as a father of three, you know, the safety of my children is paramount, whether they're in school or not in school. So that is a battle cry that won't change for me. But to be able to mandate and regulate from the federal level down to the schools and the state level, I think is a little bit premature. I think the states, because each state is different, I think, you know, you don't have these situations happening in every state, but it does affect every state because of the outcry of what's happening. So I would sit down and figure out and work in concert with the federal government in New Hampshire, what is the best thing for us? I'll be honest with you, I don't know which one of those propositions is the best. You know, each one of them has a situation where you can find pluses and minuses. But at the end of the day, safety of our children is paramount. But we shouldn't forget as to why an individual would feel that that's the recourse, the only recourse to have to deal with whatever issue they're dealing with. And so I personally, not to take us down another path, but, you know, we need to look at the root cause of why somebody would do that.
Well, and another specific area where this sort of New Hampshire and national policy intersect has to do with the national background check system, Representative Negron. And a couple other Republican candidates that we've talked to have said, don't pass new laws, fix the background check system that we currently have, strengthen existing laws. It turns out New Hampshire has been one of a handful of states that historically has not reported mental health information to this National Instant Criminal Background Check System. A lot of people call it NICS. Should New Hampshire give that information to the NICS system to strengthen it?
Well, I'd have to look at what the ramifications of that would be. I'm a huge proponent of the Second Amendment. Even more than that, Laura, I'm a huge proponent of the Bill of Rights. And so I would make sure that anything we do wouldn't be infringing on that situation. I would talk to the state legislature, those fine people that serve in the state legislature.
You and, among them.
Thank you very much. And see if that was something that was right for the state of New Hampshire. You know, and we have great dialogue on the floor in the House. And if that's something that this state would want to do, that's up to the state. I don't think that's a federal mandate that has to come down, because not all states are following the same methodology.
You know, I want to ask you one more question, and boy, I wish we had more time, Representative
Negron. I'm going to come back.
Whoever's the nominee, we are
absolutely
setting up debates
among
the two candidates. So if you're the nominee, we will definitely see you there. Your grandfather was from Mexico.
Yes, ma'am.
How does his experience shape your view, Representative Negron, of the immigration debate? And we should say you also have family in Puerto Rico.
Yes, ma'am. I think it's so significant and it's so pertinent today, and I think that's another thing that separates me from anybody else in the Republican field. You know, my grandfather came from a western state of Mexico called Michoacán in 1921 as a young 17-year-old. And then he decided to become a citizen in 1946. The issue for me is that that's what he wanted to do. Most people may not want to become a citizen. You know, there's 185 ways to come into this country. But to him, there was a process and a way to do it, and he followed it, and that's what's been instilled in me.
All right. We could follow up with 16 more questions on that. Big debate about how easy it is to get in line and
yes,
follow
ma'am.
The rules and so forth. But we'll wrap it up there. Representative Negron, thank you very much
thank
for coming.
Thank you so
in.
Much
I
for having me, Laura. Thank you.
That's Steve Negron. He's a Republican candidate for the 2nd Congressional District and a representative in New Hampshire's House. Thanks to everybody for listening and watching our entire series with all the primary congressional candidates. Now, if you're trying to get up to speed on these primaries, you can go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange. We've got all the interviews there. You can watch and listen. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.